Welcome to CutOrTap.com and thank you for supporting Dead Draw Gaming. My name is Andy Hyun and I'll be presenting Power Creep and its History in the Pokemon TCG. This article was authored by Jake Gearhart and published on October 4th, 2023. Power Creep, a term often thrown around in discussions of card game design. Broadly, it describes the phenomenon of cards becoming gradually more, air quote, powerful over long periods of time. In my view, the way most people talk about power creep is superficial. Discussions I've seen only focus on the surface and elude anything worth being concerned over from a player's perspective. What I'll be exploring throughout this article is where the substance lies, relative power creep, and its many manifestations. Section 1. Power creep in HP. The easiest way to observe power creep in the Pokemon TCG is by observing the HP of cards over time. As an example, let's look at the progression of regular single-prize Mewtwo cards. In the article text, you will see a graphic of all the mechanically unique regular Mewtwo cards from base set up until Scarlet Violet 151. This excludes reprints, multi-prize Mewtwo cards, and specially named cards like Rocket's Mewtwo. Mewtwo debuted in base set with 60 HP and was printed with either 60 HP or 70 HP up until its first print in the Diamond and Pearl era. This card from Majestic Dawn, first card pictured on the second row, jumped to 90 HP, and the following two cards from the Diamond and Pearl era had it at 80 and 100 HP, respectively. Mewtwo didn't have a card from the Heart Gold Soul Silver era, and the next time it was featured was during the end of the Black and White era. Here we see a jump to 120 HP, which is shared by its next print as an XY promo card. In the Evolution set, Mewtwo is given 130 HP. That's more than double its HP in the original base set print that the Evolution's Mewtwo is a spiritual reprint of. Throughout the Sun and Moon era, Mewtwo is either featured with 120 or 130 HP, and the three cards from the Sword and Shield era to Scarlet Violet 151 give Mewtwo 130 HP. An important thing to pinpoint in this progression is when exactly HP jumps took place. Most power increases take place at the start of a new generation, and this is reflected in Mewtwo's jump from 70 to 90 HP in the Diamond and Pearl era, and its jump from 100 to 120 HP in the Black and White era. This trend of power increases each generation is shared among most Pokemon, as you'll see in examples later. But for now we should ask, how exactly is this information useful to players? The short answer is that it isn't very useful at all. The only takeaway of note is that while you're looking at results many years in the past, you should remember vaguely to adjust your expectations of what a good card looks like. 70 HP back in base set was much better of a number than 70 HP is today. This is the essence of almost all discussions on power creep, and the reason why those discussions are superficial. They make sense in other card games with an unlimited format where you can use cards from many years prior. However, in Pokemon, we're limited to the previous 3 years of cards in the standard format, so the effects of long-term power creep like this are often inconsequential. There's no meaningful difference between playing with 100 HP Pokemon that two-hit KO each other and 300 HP Pokemon that two-hit KO each other. The only time you'll notice cards on the whole becoming more powerful is at the start of a new generation. As I mentioned before, the substance lies in relative power creep, and we'll need to take a look at more cards to define what that means. In the next image in the article text, you will find all the mechanically unique regular Blastoise cards from base set up until Scarlet Violet 151. Blastoise debuted in base set with 100 HP and stayed at that number throughout the first two generations. During the Ruby and Sapphire era, Blastoise's HP had a slight increase to 110 HP and 120 HP. And a similar increase occurred during the Diamond and Pearl era, where Blastoise was featured with 120 and 130 HP, and HeartGold Soul Silver kept it at 130. Black and White's Boundaries Crossed saw an increase to 140, and Blastoise wasn't printed during the X and Y era. When it returned in the Sun and Moon era, it had 160, and finally, Sword and Shield increased it to 170. Note the difference in the HP increase from Mewtwo and Blastoise. While Mewtwo's HP more than doubled with a 116% increase from 60 to 130, Blastoise's HP only increased by 70% from 100 to 170. Over the years, regular Mewtwo cards have become stronger relative to Blastoise cards. This is what I mean by relative power creep. In general, regular basic Pokemon that are fully evolved, that is, don't have any evolutions, seem to be increasing in power at a faster rate than other regular Pokemon. Some more evidence of this can be found by comparing the progression of the classic Haymaker duo, Hitmonchan and Electabuzz. In the next graphic in the article text, you will see all the mechanically unique regular Hitmonchan and Electabuzz cards from base set to Scarlet Violet 151. Hitmonchan and Electabuzz both debuted in base set with 70 HP, and each had their lowest HP cards printed in the Gold and Silver era at 60. Now looking today, Electabuzz's print in Scarlet Violet 151 has 90, and Hitmonchan's has 120. Electabuzz's HP has increased only 50% from its lowest at 60 to 90, while Hitmonchan's has increased by 100% from 60 to 120. While both Pokemon started as fully evolved in the first generation, Electabuzz received an evolution in Electivire during the fourth generation, effectively stunting its power creep. While the greater relative power creep of regular, fully evolved basic Pokemon is significant, that difference is benign compared to what happened with two prized Pokemon. Original EXs, capital EXs, GXs, Vs, and now modern EXs. In the next graphic in the article text, there are all the mechanically unique two prize Mewtwo cards from base set to Paradox Rift. The original Mewtwo EX debuted in Ruby Sapphire with 100 HP. 9 years later, Mewtwo capital EX was printed with 170, which was the same number used by two Mewtwo EXs from the X and Y era. The Mewtwo EX from the Evolution set had 180, and the Mewtwo GXs from the Sun and Moon era all either had 180 or 190. Mewtwo V from the Sword and Shield era jumps to 220, and Mewtwo EX from Paradox Rift in the Scarlet Violet era increases to 230. That's an astonishing 130% increase just since the Ruby and Sapphire era, where regular Mewtwo cards have only increased by 85.7% since then. And if we just look at Black and White onwards, regular Mewtwo cards increased by 8.3%, while two prized Mewtwo cards have increased 35.3%. We can also compare the difference between a two prize card and the regular counterparts in its respective era. The original Mewtwo EX with 100 HP had 42.8% higher HP than regular Mewtwo cards of the time, which all had 70. Mewtwo EX from the Black and White era has 41.6% more HP than regular Mewtwo. So it turns out, when compared to their regular counterparts, Black and White EXs aren't so different in power level from the original EXs. The power increase comes solely from the general trend of fully evolved basics getting more powerful. Mewtwo V from the Sword Shield era, however, has 69.2% more HP than regular Mewtwo, and Mewtwo EX from Scarlet Violet has 76.9% more HP. That's a major difference, and I'll cover the very noticeable consequences of this difference later. The last thing to cover on the topic of HP is analyzing the difference in HP across entire evolution lines. Gardevoir is the best example for this because of its numerous successful 1-prize and 2-prize cards throughout the game's history. Point 1. During the Ruby Sapphire era, the highest HP on Ralts was 50, Kirlias had 70, regular Gardevoir had 100, and both Gardevoir EXs had 150. That's a 40% increase in HP from Ralts to Kirlia, and from Kirlia to Gardevoir, then a 50% increase from regular Gardevoir to Gardevoir EX. Point 2. During the Sun and Moon era, the highest HP on Ralts cards was 60, Kirlias had 80, regular Gardevoir had 130, and Gardevoir GX had 230. That's a 33.3% increase from Ralts to Kirlia, a 62.5% increase from Kirlia to regular Gardevoir, and a 76.9% increase from regular Gardevoir to Gardevoir GX. Point 3. In the Sword and Shield to early Scarlet Violet era, The highest HP on Ralt's cards is 70, Kirlias have 80, regular Gardevoir has 140, and Gardevoir EX has 310. That's a 14.3% increase from Ralts to Kirlia, a 75% increase from Kirlia to regular Gardevoir, and a 121.4% increase from regular Gardevoir to Gardevoir EX. As the numbers show, this is more evidence that the disparity between the HP of fully evolved Pokemon and pre-evolved Pokemon has been growing substantially, just like the example of Hitmonchan and Electabuzz demonstrated before. But what does this really mean practically? Percentages can be useful for viewing these disparities precisely, but there is a more intuitive way to view these differences. Point 1. During the Ruby Sapphire era, knocking out one Gardevoir EX is equivalent in damage to knocking out 3 Ralts, 50 times 3. And the lowest damage attack that 2-hit KOs Gardevoir EX, 80 damage, does not 1-hit KO regular Gardevoir. Point 2. In the Sun and Moon era, knocking out one Gardevoir GX is equivalent in damage to knocking out nearly 4 Ralts, 60 times 4. And the lowest damage attack that 2-hit KOs Gardevoir GX does not 1-hit KO regular Gardevoir. In the current era, knocking out one Gardevoir EX is equivalent in damage to knocking out about 4.5 Ralts, 70 times 4.5 equals 315, or about 4 Kirlias, 80 times 4. And the lowest damage attack that 2-hit KOs Gardevoir EX, 160, does 1-hit KO regular Gardevoir. Section 2. Power Creep in Attacks. Evaluating the relative power level of a certain HP number is nothing without considering attack damage in tandem. If a card has 120 HP that could be high or low, good or bad, all depending on how much damage attacks are doing. The simplest way to categorize attack damage is to break it down into how many repetitions of that attack it would take to knock out popular Pokemon in a format. Is an attack 1-hit KOing, 2-hit KOing, etc. If we look at the current standard format as of September 2023, almost all decks have a way to 1-hit KO multiple 2-prize Pokemon in a game, and they all can easily 1-hit KO fully evolved 1-prize Pokemon, or are based around multi-target attacks that can knock out Pokemon before they're fully evolved. Compare that to base set, where the most powerful attackers weren't ever 1-hit KOing each other, and many struggled to even 2-hit KO, which made games significantly slower to the point where deck out was a common win condition. Damage is always tied to cost of use. That includes an attack's energy cost, the cost to get the Pokemon that's attacking into play, and how many turns will the attacker survive before it needs to be replaced. In the case of the current standard format, energy acceleration is more varied and prevalent than it's ever been in the history of the game. And draw power is at such an extreme that setting up otherwise costly attackers is relatively easy. Meanwhile, in the early days of the Pokemon TCG, cards like Gust of Wind and the duo of energy removal cards made attackers with attack costs that would be reasonable in most formats a relative pipe dream to use then. Another important way to analyze attacks is by looking at how many prize cards a certain amount of cost is going to yield. An attack like Giratina V-Star's Lost Impact is fairly expensive, so if it were regularly only yielding one prize card per attack, it wouldn't be worth using in repetition. But in the current standard format, Giratina V-Star base decks are positioned to be able to use Lost Impact to take 1-hit KOs on 2-prize Pokemon frequently. The intended target of an attack is also important for judging its power. Lugia EX, Stoutland V, and Iron Hands EX, graphic of those in the article text, do a moderate amount of damage and take extra prize cards. If you look at overall trends in power creep, Lugia EX seems the strongest out of the three by far because HP was lower in the past, until you recognize where all three cards intend to be attacking into one prize Pokemon. As we saw before, their HP hasn't changed much at all since the Black and White era. Just because Stoutland V, even with powerful colorless energies, and Iron Hands EX aren't getting anywhere near to the HP of 2-prize Pokemon, like Lugia EX could get closer to, it doesn't mean they're significantly weaker. As long as they're eclipsing the HP numbers of their targets, they serve the same purpose. The power of card draw and energy acceleration to fuel these expensive attacks is what determines their viability, not the attack effect's power on its own. As a final note on attack damage power creep, while almost everything related to power creep is only worth discussing when talking about relative power creep, there is one worthwhile thing to mention. The math in the game is getting more complicated. While it's true that as the numbers get larger, it becomes more difficult to calculate attack damage and place damage counters, there is an added flexibility from the perspective of the game designers. Attack damage can be made more precise so that it one-hit KOs one Pokemon but is barely out of range of another. It also opens up for more useful multipliers in attack damage. Attacks that do damage based on multiples of 30, 40, 50, and 60 all coexist now, and the potential for larger numbers exists. Section 3. Power creep in draw power and energy acceleration. In card games without a rotating standard format, power creep is an irreversible issue. In order for the game to avoid stagnation, game designers want new cards to replace old ones in decks. They can either print cards on the same power level with more complicated and niche effects with restrictions, or simply make new cards more powerful than the old ones. Once the latter has been done, any newer cards that are meant to compete with a power crept card have to be power crept themselves. Rotating standard formats can evade this issue because older cards are forced out of use by a rotation. If the game designers desire, they can simply wait until a powerful card leaves the format before implementing new ideas. But Pokemon's game designers are impatient, and to a large extent, players are as well. They want a consistent stream of new archetypes that beat out older ones, so they make newer cards slightly more powerful than older ones. But this is really only the case with Pokemon designed to be attackers, not trainer or energy cards, and not support Pokemon. The design team seems to be content with only one or two supporter engines dominating the format for years on end, and with supporting effects like Raindance coming and going. Generally, when draw power and energy acceleration become more powerful and common, cards which require delivering high value for a high cost become more powerful. Like I mentioned before with Lugia EX, Stoutland V, and Iron Hands EX, just looking at the attack effect's power isn't enough to determine their viability. When we look at the cards that surround Lugia EX, we see comparable energy acceleration effects to today from Electric's Dynamotor, Blastoise's Deluge, Emboar's Inferno Fandango, and Colress Machine, but the Pokemon-based draw power is far weaker. In addition to Lugia EX's attack requiring a Plasma Energy to be attached, it takes longer to get the rest of the energy attached than with Stoutland V and Iron Hands EX, which can realistically attack on turn 2. So the decrease in power level in terms of damage is more than made up for by the ease of setting them up. Section 4. Consequences of power creep. Among the previous anecdotes of consequences I've mentioned so far, there are a few major ramifications of the increasing disparity between the stats of fully evolved Pokemon, two-prize Pokemon, and pre-evolved Pokemon. Universal spread attacks that hit all Pokemon regardless of their stage and characteristics are now difficult to make viable and not game-breaking at the same time. During the Sun and Moon era, we saw spread attacks like Tapu Koko's Fly and Flip and Weezing's Splattering Sludge have enormous success, but these effects have dropped off since the Sword and Shield era for good reason. Take a deck filled with big basics like Maridon EX. In order to design a spread-based deck that's competitive with this deck, the deck would need to be capable of putting and fully utilizing 600 to 660 damage in around 5 turns, which could KO 3 2-prize Pokemon with 200 to 220 HP. This is spreading 120 to 130 damage each turn, and getting it on 3 targets to KO. Now pair whatever balanced spread deck you have against a deck with regular Pokemon, especially Pokemon that need to evolve. Whatever solution was balanced around the 2-prizers is going to vastly overpower this matchup in most circumstances. The larger issue is when it comes to why spread decks were powerful at all during the Sun and Moon era, Tapu Lele's Magical Swap. Tapu Koko's and Weezing's attacks were balanced around the power level of regular Pokemon, not the GXs of the era, so they wouldn't be strong on their own. Alongside help from the Stadium Card Shrine of Punishment, the way they were able to succeed in matchups against basic GX heavy decks was by moving damage they had put in play to whichever targets needed to be KO'd through Tapu Lele's magical swap. At the time, this was a harmless effect used almost exclusively in spread strategies. If it were printed today, it would be used for a very different purpose. When Boundaries Cross Dust Noir was in the standard format, it was typically combined with regular attackers that two-hit KO'd the Pokemon EX of the day, but wasted damage in doing so. Two attacks of 110 damage into a Pokemon with 170 HP would result in 50 wasted damage. Dust Noir's Sinister Hand could move that damage off onto another Pokemon EX with 170 HP so that it would be KO'd by just one 110 damage attack. Tapu Lele's Magical Swap wasn't as often used for this purpose because it's an attack rather than ability. It would need to be setting up multiple KOs in order to be more valuable than just attacking again. That's something that couldn't easily be done during the Sun and Moon era, but would be trivially easy today. I mentioned how knocking out Gardevoir EX is equivalent in damage to knocking out about 4.5 Ralts or 4 Kirlias. This value can be converted into something real with an effect like Tapu Lele's Magical Swap. Nowadays, a Pokemon like Giratina V-Star could hit into a Gardevoir EX for 280 damage, then move all 280 damage off onto benched Pokemon with a damage moving effect to KO 4 Pokemon at once, obliterating a player's board. The relative power creep disparity between 2 prize Pokemon and regular Pokemon has become large enough where if an unrestricted effect like this were to return, it would destroy the format. And without the ability to move damage around, spread attacks that wouldn't be game-breaking against regular Pokemon are relegated to unviability. Another example is the loss of regular Pokemon with high HP and worthwhile setup attacks. Back during the X and Y era, Yveltal EX was a hugely popular attacker because of its capability to build up to one-hit KO anything through Evil Ball. However, it took a few turns to get enough energy in play to use Evil Ball effectively. Regular Yveltal became a popular card to lead the game with before Yveltal EX was ready because of its Oblivion Wing attack. Paired with the damage-boosting tool Muscle Band and the combination of Hypnotoxic Laser and Verbank City Gym, regular Yveltal could set up energy on Yveltal EX, put meaningful damage into play to make Yveltal EX's attacks more threatening, and act as an early game wall that was difficult to remove. Now imagine a card like this today. We're in a time of high power energy acceleration, so the effect of an attack like Oblivion Wing would have to be adjusted to compete. But the damage and HP are where the foundational issues lay. Oblivion Wing with a damage modifier was hitting for around 30% of a Pokemon EX's HP. If that number were balanced to do around 30% of the HP of V-Star Pokemon, it would already be one-hit KOing basic unevolved Pokemon, putting on far more pressure than intended against one-prize Pokemon. The HP of regular Yveltal cards hasn't increased at all since X and Y, but because the HP of two-prize Pokemon have, attack damage grew to match. So a new Yveltal with 130 HP would be frail and defenseless compared to bulky ones like the original. It would need 170 HP to be proportional to basic EXs, and even then, it would be much weaker still than the original due to the HP of Stage 1 and Stage 2 cards being even higher. In conclusion, throughout the Pokemon TCG's history, mechanics and concepts have been recycled by the game designers and players alike. If you have a good amount of knowledge and experience, you can use these techniques of analysis to more easily recognize why a newly revealed card may or may not be useful in the present before others do by comparing with the past. And if you're less experienced in formats of the past, you can use these methods of analyzing cards to help in any endeavors to explore the past. You hopefully won't be caught off guard as much by cards being powerful despite doing a fraction of the damage we see today. I hope you enjoyed and learned from this article, and I hope I've sparked your interest in investigating more about game design.